Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Cosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This is the broadcast for December the 11th in the year of our Lord, 2017. This is our one of two. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. We're also convinced that the checks and balances put in place by the founders brilliant, one of the great solutions. We reject revolution, but stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. By the way, Friday, we had our guest on, a former jihadist, Kamal Saleen. Kamal left his family and his home in the Middle East as a young man to enter the United States. He brought with him a tremendous amount of anger and hatred, and he wanted to convert as many Christians and Jews as possible to Allah. Nevertheless, he got in a car wreck, had real trouble, was cared for by Christians, turned into a Christian, and now speaks out for the American ideal. He says there's a cultural jihad going on in America, and it's dangerous, and it will destroy America if we're not careful. The seven mountains of jihad to destroy U.S. influence talks about education, the media, business, government. I mean, it goes on. But the bottom line is, this guy's doing a great job of speaking out about the evils of radical Islam and how we need to be kind to them and show them Christian behavior. And if they really get treated with Christian behavior, many of these people can change. They've just never known such peace. They've never known what Christianity is. They've been brainwashed and their understanding has been absolutely poisoned. But you know what? They have the light of Christ. They have the opportunity to learn. And if we're kind to them and teach them a better way, oftentimes before they commit violent hatred, evil acts, they will turn. The ones that we got to watch out for and vet the most are the ones that are single men, that are young. The ones that are the least problematic are the ones with children and wives, or a wife at least. We got to really understand this, and we got to behave accordingly in ways that can change the game. And I'm telling you right now, going to war everywhere is not the answer. We'll get into that as the broadcast unfolds today. Before we get started with our guest, Lowell Nelson, let's have Scoop Stanton jump on, well-known reporter for the Political Cesspool and Liberty Roundtable Live, as well as he's a talk show host. He does his own radio program called Red 42 every Saturday night, syndicated by LibertyNewsRadio.com. So it's Red 42, the numbers, by the way, RED42.org. Check that out to learn more, to listen to his incredible radio programs. But in the meantime, there's an explosion in New York, Scoop.
Yes, there is. Good morning, Sam, and good morning, Kurt, and the listeners of Liberty Roundtable. At 7:20 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, there was an explosion at the 430 bus terminal in New York City, New York. The 430 bus terminal is located at 42nd and 8th Avenue. There was a pipe bomb that was detonated near the subway station at the 430 bus terminal. The subway lines was the A and Alpha C's and Charlie line. Three people have been injured so far, including the suspect. The suspect is in custody. He's in the Bellevue Hospital. Allegedly, he had another pipe bomb and a battery pack on him when he was taken into custody. That's the only only one bomb was detonated. Supposedly or allegedly, the bomber is a man in his 20s from Bangladesh. This has been unconfirmed. Also, we don't know if what religious affiliation or anything of that nature. Right now, emergency services units from NYPD are on the scene in droves, probably in the hundreds. Also, the Port Authority police are on scene, of course, because the Port Authority bus terminal is under the jurisdiction of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. In the meantime, the following subway lines are bypassing 42nd Street. 1, 2, 3, A, C, E, N, Q, and the 7 line. which that means of the any commuters that need to get off of 42nd Street between 8th Avenue and 7th Avenue will have to either get off on or before. Also, the Port Authority Bus Terminal is closed. The Port Authority Bus Terminal is also the world's largest bus terminal in the world, and it's just nothing but a superstructure of buses.
So we're talking about the largest bus terminal in the world, but also the busiest at rush hour right now, right?
Yes, it is, because we have this, literally tens of thousands of commuters take buses into Manhattan and then get on the subways. So the traffic is tied up. There's no buses coming in or out of the Port Authority bus terminal. The buses are being diverted to a place like Secaucus, New Jersey, where they're taking either New York Waterway Ferry or New Jersey Transit Railroad into the city. The Lincoln Tunnel has over an hour wait to get from New Jersey into Manhattan. The traffic lanes for buses has been diverted for only emergency vehicles. But now the buses going into Manhattan Island are also now sharing the lanes with the passenger cars. The Lincoln Tunnel is a three-tube system. Depending on the time of day, you have two tubes going rush hour and one tube going the opposite direction. So traffic is tied up because the Lincoln Tunnel drops you off on 43rd and 8th Avenue. So it's quite a mess. They blocked off 7th to 12th Avenues, 31st Street to 42nd Street. So it's absolute gridlock in Midtown Manhattan.
All right, a little update, too, as far as we understand. The President, Donald Trump, has been apprised of this. The question becomes, is there going to be more calls for more security and more lockdown of the peaceful citizen in America? Are they going to find out this guy isn't illegal or came from one of these countries that Donald is trying to block immigration from, if you will? You know, time will tell how political this one gets, right, Scoop?
Of course, because what's going to happen is that everybody's going to jump to conclusions. All right, we need more security, more iron ring ever since 9/11, but in New York, especially around Midtown Manhattan, which is a very high traffic area for tourists. You see tons and tons of New York's finest protecting the tourists and the people going in and out. Also, there's a lot of emergency services personnel. They're the officers with the rifles and the Kevlar helmets just standing around doing much of nothing. So, but, you know, instead of worrying about the people coming here to do us harm, like this individual at the 430 bus terminal, we need more guns pointed at the American citizens. I'm not trying to get political about this. Let's try to find out what happened at the Port Authority bus terminal. Any of our listeners that are from the New York City area, just use caution going in and out because your community's going to stink today.
Amen to that. And from a constitutional or a political point of view, or whatever you want to call it, a moral point of view, in my mind, you know, the issue is to find out how to protect the American people. The issue is to find out how to do it constitutionally. And the issue is to try to find out how to not violate people's rights. In other words, how do you balance liberty and security? It's a tough battle. What we need to make sure people do not do is trade their security for liberty and wind up with neither. And that's kind of the big point in my mind here. No matter what we do, we need to be patient, cautious, methodical, and we need to support the rule of law. And, locking down the average citizen over this stuff is their excuse to take away our rights. But it isn't the right way to go about it, Scoop.
Of course not. I mean, if you look at the Transportation Security Agency at the airports now, they're shaking down old ladies, priests, active duty members of the military. But if you're from a foreign country and you have no luggage and you're taking a cross-country trip from JFK Airport to LAX, you know, they'll apologize and say, sorry, sir, for the inconvenience. Meanwhile, a TSA agent was caught with bringing a loaded firearm in his lunch bag. So that's your government network. But, if we try to stop these people from coming over here in the first place, vet them, find out who they are, if they want it, they have any ties to terrorist organizations, we can't do that or Chuck Schumer is going to cry in front of a TV camera. Meanwhile, we've had the World Trade Center bomb back in 93. I was in New York, living in New York at the time. All these other terrorist attacks that we've been going on and on and on and on. I mean, we've gotten used to it, but
All right. If anything else breaks, let us know. Scoop. In the meantime, I only have one question left. Why do you guys all live together? Why don't people just like spread out and get rid of the traffic jams? And I mean, there's a big country out there, my friend.
Well, right. Well, New York is the center of the universe. So you have this little tiny island called Manhattan. And if it wasn't for the skyscrapers for the people to live in and to work in, there wouldn't be enough room. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. That's what
I hear you. That's why I think you guys ought to spread out and move somewhere else. All right, thanks for your time, sir.
All right, talk to you, Sam.
All right, he is a talk show host. Red42.org is his website, and he's a reporter, a stringer, keeps a good tab on things for us in New York and back east and stuff like that when things break. So we'll come straight back to Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org on Liberty Roundtable Live in seconds. Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T. At libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's advanced distance education program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, riding shotgun today. Welcome to the broadcast, sir. Any quick thoughts on the Manhattan scenario?
Well, I was just thinking about the same thing you were. I mean, why are so many people living so closely together like that? I would think that, you know, liberty-minded people would want to put themselves in or take themselves out of that position so that they wouldn't be so dependent, you know, on, subject to that kind of a situation. And I remembered a little math problem I did years ago. I asked myself how many people could fit in the state of Washington, you know, on the northwest corner of the land mass of the, known as the United States. You know, the state of Washington, 71,000 square miles. And if I remember right, back when I did this, if you put the entire population of the world, you could fit them all in the state of Washington on a square yard. Basically, everybody in the world, all 6 billion people at the time I did the math problem, 6 or 7 billion people could fit. Each one of them could have one square yard in the state of Washington. And so there is lots of room all around the globe, you know, lots of room for people to spread out, as you said. And I think that's important for liberty. I think when we get, you know, what we find is where people gather in urban cities and urban centers, they tend to vote, you know, less and less for liberty and more for socialistic programs and welfare programs. So I think in the long term, it behooves us to spread out a bit and not be quite so tight in such a tight situation, Sam.
All right. I bring it up just because I'm not saying a pipe bomb is a little thing. It's a horrible thing. But I am saying, you know what? There's going to be evil people. There has been since the beginning of the world evil people, and they do bad things. And the more we're spread out, the less that would have a negative effect. I mean, you got literally millions of, you know, hundreds of thousands at the least affected by this, just by this one act. It just seems so catastrophic. But yet, if we were to spread out, people would have a much better life, in my humble opinion. Anyway, I digress, except to say they're trying to bring the war to our shores. And one of the big reasons we claim that we got to go to war around the world is to stop it from coming to our shores. But we're having war around the world and war on the homeland now.
And that war around the world is one of the main things that I like to talk about, because I think people need to be more and more aware of that, and in hopes, you know, and I talk about it in hopes that people will persuade their congressmen to come home. And, you know, Representative John Duncan is an example of that. He is the last Republican still serving in Congress who voted against the war in Iraq. And recently he wrote an article that appeared in a mainstream newspaper, and basically he was illustrating the folly of continuing the war in Afghanistan. For those of you who are counting, we entered that war in late 2001 or 2002, and it's been going ever since, so roughly 16 years. You know, it's been said, Sam, that Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires because foreign powers who have tried to control Afghanistan, occupy it, and so forth, have found it to be kind of a boneyard. I mean, they can't conquer it, and then they end up without their money, and they go home. That's what happened in Russia.
And they can't conquer it primarily because we have no business conquering nations in the first place.
Exactly. And it's, you know, in 1955, James Michener wrote, quote, "One day both American and Russia would invade Afghanistan, and both would come to regret it," end of quote. Now, he wrote that 62 years ago, Sam. And yet we have seen that play out today, right? Russia invaded Afghanistan in the 80s, and that's when the U.S. was helping bin Laden fight them, the Mujahideen, and they finally fought them off, and Russia left. And now America is taking a turn, and we're trying to go in there, unfortunately, the U.S. foreign policy.
But it just goes back to George Washington and others of the founding fathers who warned us, you know what? Avoid foreign entanglements like the plague. They don't do you any good. They won't help. The outcome won't be good. And you know, they knew that back then. This is nothing new. We just don't pay attention.
Exactly right, Sam. You know, 8 years ago, this same representative, John Duncan, wrote the following. He said, "Conservatives who oppose big government and huge deficit spending at home should not support it in foreign countries just because it is being done by our biggest bureaucracy, the Defense Department. We have now spent $1.5 trillion that we did not have, that we had to borrow in Iraq and Afghanistan." Now that number, end of quote, that number, $1.5 trillion, was 8 years ago. And it far exceeds that now. It's well over $5 trillion today. And so we continue to borrow money that we do not have and spend it, basically waste it. It's a waste of our treasure and a waste of the blood of American lives, and a huge waste in terms of the lives of the Middle Eastern people who are over there because of the collateral damage. That's just a euphemism for, you know, the fact that waging war militarily results in the death and destruction of thousands of other people, civilians particularly, men, women, and children who were not involved directly in the conflict. And it's a sad, sad thing. And so Representative Duncan will continue to speak out about this. He is leaving Congress, by the way, at the end of the year, or at the end of his term, and which I believe is next year. But he also cited William F. Buckley, who supported the war in Iraq initially, but later became a strong opponent before his death. It was Buckley who said that a point is reached when tenacity conveys not steadfastness of purpose, but misapplication of pride. And I thought that was an apt description, Sam, of the mentality which our top brass basically has about U.S. occupation in Afghanistan.
Well, in terms of Buckley, it shows the humility of a real leader.
Yeah, because a real leader is able to admit a mistake and change his course, whereas someone who is just full of himself, full of pride, he can't admit that he's made a mistake, and therefore he continues his course of action to the detriment of his country and others and to himself. So I just thought that was really quite a meaningful statement. We need to take a lesson from that. We need leaders who are willing to admit mistakes and then change course. You know, I love the fact that on the campaign trail, Ron Paul would say, we marched in, we can march right back out, and we can just come home. And he's exactly right. There's nothing wrong with admitting a mistake and saying we're going to change our course, we're going to change our direction, because it is senseless to continue on in our current direction. So, you know, in closing his article, Representative Duncan, he expressed his regret at the meaninglessness of the ongoing wars when he said, quote, "It's very sad that we have allowed all these trillions of dollars to be spent and all those lives that have been lost needlessly," end of quote. And so truly it has been an awful waste of blood and treasure. And so that's pretty much for the interview, for the article that he wrote. But in a recent interview with Tom Woods, I just want to mention this one other thing. He said, he quoted Winston Churchill. Now, this is a quote that some people say that Winston Churchill denied ever saying it, but nevertheless, it's attributed to him, and whether he said it or not isn't important. What matters is the idea behind it. But it was Winston Churchill, apparently, who was commenting about the entry of the United States into World War I. He said, Churchill has allegedly said, "If you," speaking of the United States, "had not entered the World War, then we would have made peace with Germany early in 1917. Had we made peace then, there would have been no collapse in Russia followed by communism, no breakdown in Italy followed by fascism, and Germany would not have signed the Versailles Treaty, which has enthroned Nazism in Germany. In other words, if America had stayed out of the war, then all of these isms wouldn't today be sweeping the continent of Europe and breaking down parliamentary government. And if England had made peace early in 1917, it would have saved over 1 million British, French, American, and other lives."
And I would not go so far as to subscribe one action to the actions downstream historically. In other words, if this was the case, that wouldn't have been the case. I don't know what would or would not have been. What I do know is the general point is true, that, hey, the more we engage, the more we think war is peace, the more we pick sides, the more we meddle, the more we involve ourselves in foreign entanglements, the worse it gets. There's no doubt about that reality.
Absolutely right, Sam.
All right, quick pause. Lil Nelson's with us. Stay right there, ladies and gentlemen. We want to talk about the death penalty in seconds as well. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans purchase their groceries while having no idea that almost every essential food product on the shelves is certified kosher by one of over 1,000 rabbinical agencies across the country. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics and politics. In an effort to promote awareness to this kosher question, developers have recently published an app for your smartphone that will not only educate users on this little-known phenomenon, but also features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosher-tified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at kosher-tified.com. Wouldn't it be prudent to start eating in favor of your own interests? The Kosher-tified app will be your start. Download it now at kosher-tified.com. That's kosher-tified.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today. With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live. Sam Kurt, Lowell Nelson. Death penalty seems to be hot. I guess every so often we have this cyclical discussions about these kind of topics, huh, Lowell?
Well, we do, Sam. And I think it's probably going to be a topic of discussion in the Utah legislature this upcoming session. And so I thought that I would study it, read up about it a little bit, and then discuss it here on the show this morning. I think, 20 years ago, I was 100% in favor of the death penalty or capital punishment. You know, if you look at, I guess we ought to define our terms here. From Wikipedia, capital punishment is also known as the death penalty. Is a government-sanctioned practice whereby a person is put to death by the state as a punishment for a crime. The sentence that someone be punished in such a manner is referred to as a death sentence, whereas the act of carrying out the sentence is known as an execution. Crimes that are punishable by death are known as capital crimes or capital offenses, and they commonly include offenses such as murder, treason, espionage, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. So that's what we mean by capital punishment. You know, 20, 30 years ago, as I was growing up, of course, I was totally in favor of it. And then, you know, as time has passed, and as I've noticed the or mal prosecutions, where you know prosecutorial misconduct and other things, I've seen how innocent people get framed. I've seen how tyrannical the government can be, and you know, a common practice of tyrannical government is to put their opponents away as political prisoners and or execute them. And so I'm becoming increasingly skeptical about capital punishment. And so I went back to a column that Ron Paul wrote in 2015, where that was one of the things that he changed his mind about, Sam. When he first went into Congress, he was in favor of capital punishment, but then based on the things that he saw and witnessed as a, you know, in his work as a congressman, he actually changed his position on it and became an opponent of capital punishment. So I thought it'd be well for us just to review several of the points that he made in his column. And then I'm sincerely interested in your perspective on this and Kurt. And I want to quote a little bit from the Book of Mormon. And look at the policy of the LDS Church, because they have something to say about it, and then just see where this takes. It's kind of a free-flowing discussion.
I'm for doing it. It's a long subject, so it'll take us a while. We might not get to any other topic, though, but it's worth exploration for sure. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints basically says they're not going to make a statement pro or con, right?
Exactly, yeah. If you look at Mormon News, which does Mormon Newsroom, there's a website called Mormon Newsroom. They say on that site, quote, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints regards the question of whether and in what circumstances the state should impose capital punishment as a matter to be decided solely by the prescribed processes of civil law. We neither promote nor oppose capital punishment, end of quote. So I thought that was interesting, but, you know, one of the reasons I grew up believing in capital punishment was because of my study of the Book of Mormon.
And the Bible, because it speaks out on it as well.
It does, that's right. I mean, in the Bible, the punishment for adultery, for example, was stoning. There's punishment for a number of acts in the Bible, a number of crimes that can be committed in the Bible, for which you could be stoned or killed. Now, in the Book of Mormon, we read about the execution of Nehor. Nehor killed Gideon, and Alma said to Nehor, "Thou hast shed the blood of a righteous man, a man who has done much good among his people, and were we to spare thee his blood, would come upon us for vengeance. Therefore, thou art condemned to die, according to the law which has been given us by Mosiah, our last king. And it has been acknowledged by this people, therefore this people must abide by the law." And in verse 18 of chapter 1 of the Book of Alma, we read, "They durst not steal for fear of the law, for such were punished. Neither durst they rob nor murder, for he that murdered was punished unto death." End of quote. So, Sam, it sounds to me like capital punishment was in fact a deterrent in the days of Mosiah and Alma.
And in the biblical realm, too, a lot of our listeners are not Mormon, and so I don't mind quoting Mormon details so people kind of understand about them. But I want to put it in a broader context that religiously or scripturally, hey, capital punishment was a necessity, if you will. Kurt, do you want to chime in on this?
Well, I'm not sure what to add. I think you guys have said what.
Well, he wants to know what you think of it. He's changing his views on it. He wants to know your opinion.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could just simply say, hey, every time somebody's convicted of a capital offense and sent to the guillotine, if you will, that there's never any error there. But my main problem is I believe there are errors. And when you make an error and you literally kill someone, it's pretty hard to fix that, isn't it?
Yeah, amen to that. So the bottom line is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints says they're neither pro or against as a church. The scriptures all talk about capital punishment being necessary. Lowell used to believe in it. Now he's kind of wondering that. Kurt, you're wondering the same. Is that where you are? Obviously, we agree.
Well,
if there were no mistakes made,
yeah,
that would be perfect. That'd be great. Sure.
I mean, we sure got enough to take care of to fix our courts, at least in my opinion, when we see all that happens with the Bundys and all these other things. We've got enough to take care of just to, get justice today, much less worrying about, killing more people, I think.
Well, and Ron Paul makes an important point in the column, too, about pro-life, Lowell.
Right, he says that opposition to the death penalty really is a pro-life position. You know, he believes that anyone who opposes abortion and preemptive war should also oppose the death penalty. Now, responsive to what Kurt said about it being an error-prone system, Ron Paul had a comment about that, too. He said that the moral case is much stronger. He says, since it is impossible to develop an error-free death penalty system, those who support the death penalty are embracing the idea that the government should be able to execute innocent people for the greater good. The idea that the government should be able to force individuals to sacrifice their right to life for imaginary gains and personal safety is even more dangerous to liberty than the idea that the government should be able to force individuals to sacrifice their property rights for imaginary gains in economic security. And so, it's pretty hard to argue against that.
Amen to that. Now, let me speak. I don't want to speak for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, because although I am a member, I am a Mormon and proud to be so, and I'm not backing away from that one bit. I don't speak for the church in an official capacity. However, I can express an opinion. Part of the reason that the church says they don't take a stand on this is because, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is a global organization designed to bring people unto Christ. And they have an article of faith, number 12, I think it is, that talks about, you know what, we honor and obey and sustain the laws of the lands. Well, that's very sticky when you have different laws in, you know, dozens of countries. And so I think a lot of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints staying out of this fray is because, hey, it's so sticky. You know, we make a claim based on the United States law or based on the law of a given state in the union, and it's different in a different state or different in a different country. Then pretty soon, you know, the church is just caught in this big old, you know, quagmire of political discussions to no benefit. And I think personally that for the most part, I'm pro-life. I think one of the things that ought to be done is that we need to raise the bar in terms of when we allow the death penalty to occur. It's kind of like abortion. You know what? Are you 100% against abortion, Lol? And the answer is no. You probably say for the most part, I'm against it. But there are rape and incest exceptions. Or whether it threatens the life of the mother, I believe those even exceptions need to be very carefully assessed. For the most part, we're pro-life and we reject the pro-death message, but there might be exceptions. And we might look at the capital punishment issue similarly, where, you know what, for the most part, we're against it. We're pro-life. However, there are exceptions of extreme where you might say we know the murders are beyond a doubt, a shadow of a doubt or whatever. You would look at a Ted Bundy, for example. Right. That guy cost us millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to no end. He literally had a cult following outside while he was in prison for literally decades. It was beyond a doubt that he committed these murders to some degree. You know, there are very limited exceptions where I would say, you know what, I support the death penalty, because at some point it's a kinder punishment than maybe letting somebody just rot in prison for their whole life. And it's kinder instead of having taxpayers, you know, literally fund to ad nauseum lawsuits and battles and et cetera. But we might look at it kind of very narrowly and heighten or raise the bar in terms of when it's accepted. If we can literally raise the bar in terms of proving when it may need be, as opposed to a general blanket statement and take it case by case, that might be a discussion point. Let's talk about it. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
I don't find saying I'm neither for or against very helpful. I get why the churches and other organizations may do that because, again, they're global in nature and they don't, you know, the laws of the land are different wherever they may be found. I get their position. My position, though, is I'm in the United States and I have representation that needs to represent me and I got to stand somewhere on the issue. I can't just say, oh, let others decide for me. And so I would simply say, you know what, for the most part, I reject the death penalty. I'm pro-life. However, there are some pro-life exceptions that I pointed out with regards to abortion, incest being one of them, and the life of the mother, that kind of thing. Again, even when there's exceptions, I would say we need to be very careful about taking life. Well, I think we ought to raise the bar when it comes to capital punishment to say, look, we're not just going to say you killed someone and we think you did it, so you're dead. Although there are times when we might be able to be more and more confident. We can heighten the bar of when we say, you know what, you've taken a life and the only way is to, you know, lose your life so that you can have salvation or an opportunity for forgiveness on the other side. You know, there's an eternal perspective here. And I think that raising the bar is one of the greatest solutions we could have. I would not rule out the death penalty 100%. Because again, at what point is it fair and honorable to keep someone in prison forever? And then what point is it fair to society? And this is part of the reason it's not out of hatred that they require a life, but it's that can you ever let that person out in society and feel like you're not putting innocence at risk? And so there's a very unique discussion point here. And I would just simply say, you know what, I would be against the death penalty in general, but I would raise the bar, and there are exceptions, and just kind of like the pro-life exception. For the most part, I'm pro-life, but there are exceptions to that, and the opposite kind of is true. What do you think about raising the bar, Lowell?
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me, Sam, and I sincerely appreciate your perspective on the topic. I think it mirrors my own sentiment. You mentioned two things. One was the cost of incarceration versus the cost of executing somebody, and Ron Paul in his column says that New Hampshire spent over $4 million prosecuting just two death penalty cases, while Jasper County in Texas raised property taxes by 7% in order to pay for one death penalty case. In other words, it's more expensive to execute somebody than it is to put them in prison for life, and you know that's a surprise to me. I thought one of the biggest expenses.
But it's only because it's so political, not it needs to be. It's because we, again, if you're Ammon Bundy, you don't have any rights. Right. But if you're a murderer, you have all the rights in the world. See, that again, this is what I mean by we need to raise the bar and set the standards that are more appropriate. This idea is absurd.
Exactly right. Now, the other point that you mentioned that we haven't fleshed out, and then we can leave this topic probably, is the deterrent. Proponents of the death penalty believe that it deters other murders. If the penalty for murder is your own death, then you know theoretically that would deter you from murdering somebody. But Ron Paul in his column said that if the death penalty is an effective deterrent, then why do jurisdictions without the death penalty have a lower crime rate than jurisdictions with the death penalty? Why did a 2009 survey find that the majority of American police chiefs consider the death penalty the least effective way to reduce violent crime? And so even that's in question, Sam. You know, maybe not in biblical times where the death penalty was carried out within, I don't know, maybe days or weeks of the crime, you know, maybe that was an effective deterrent because they saw an immediate response to the crime. But today, like you say, the judicial system is so clogged up that it takes years and years to actually convict somebody.
Well, and that's why we need to go back to the admonitions of the Constitution. Again, a lot of times these things are broken because we don't follow the law. Look, even these murderers are entitled to being innocent until proven guilty.
Yep.
And that proof is a very high bar, and we need to stick with that and understand. And we need to realize that, they deserve a speedy trial. And so we're violating so many different components of this. It's very hard to kind of get back on track. I do think the death penalty is a deterrent. I do think on very extreme cases it needs to be practiced. I do think that we ought to raise the bar, though, to make sure that we need to be very careful that we don't just snag people in a snare and just give the government carte blanche ability just to take out anybody they want to for the reasons that they deem necessary. We got to create a check and balance there, and I think one of the greatest ways personally to determine this is have a very transparent, fully informed jury decide these cases. And that's another part of the problem is we never get to a jury in many of these cases. When we do, the jury is led around by the nose by the judge without an honest understanding of what the jury can do here. And so there's so many problems with this, it's very hard to have a pure discussion. But I simply say, I do believe the death penalty has a place, but I think we ought to use it very, 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 very judiciously or carefully. We need to raise the bar. And it needs to be very extreme, well-known, vetted, transparent, jury of their peers, convicted cases. And that's one of the things that I think we have missing oftentimes. Do you want to add to this final point there, Kurt?
No, that's good.
All right, what do you think about the fully informed jury component to this? I think that oftentimes isn't really part of the discussion, and it ought to be.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, you know, when you look at the fully informed jury, you know, it all depends on how you define that. One judge that says, hey, you know, the jury's not supposed to know about that would define it way different than differently than I would, you know?
You know, on that point, Sam, I think about the Bundy case, the one not in current motion, but the one several months ago, where it was reported that the jurors were not able to, you know, the judge disallowed some evidence from being, you know, spoken at the trial or being brought into evidence, you know, some facts. You know, if I were a jurist, if I were a member of that jury, Sam, I would speak up and I would say, Judge, that's very germane. I want to know.
And you'll be kicked off the jury as a nut.
Once you're impaneled as a jury, I don't think you can be kicked off, Sam. I may be totally mistaken.
I think that's why they have alternates, though, because when they kick you off, they got to have somebody in place. And I think you're right on the score that it ought to not be the case.
Yeah.
But I think that it is. And this is what I mean by every point of the law that I think is legitimate, they've perverted and manipulated to the point where, you know, see, this is where we've got the problem. But when 12 independent minds and people go to God in prayer and say, what should we do with this situation? I think we can get to a whole lot more of the truth than we have today.
Yeah, I totally agree, Sam. Awesome.
And I think that's part of the problem is that we just go, oh, whichever attorney's got rock star status wins, whoever's a friend with the judge wins. Hey, the jury can't know this, can't know that, can't decide this, can't determine that, can't see this evidence. At some point, we're not getting to the truth. And if we raise the bar, used fully informed transparency to juries, then I think we get a whole lot closer to raising the bar, because most guys are going to say, if I'm on the jury, I'm going to say, I better be darn sure, and I don't want it on my hands to let the death penalty happen. And so that, again, acts as an incredible deterrent to having the government get out of control on this. All right, North Korean soldier escapes. Let's get to this one before the end of the hour, Lol.
This is a great story, Sam. Just a couple of weeks ago, there's a North Korean soldier who saw an opportunity to cross the enemy's, to cross, I guess they call it the DMZ or something. Anyway, this area between North Korea and South Korea. He was a soldier on the North Korean side, but he saw an opportunity to escape, and he ran. He was shot 5 times as he fled, but he did make it to the South Korean soil, and it was loaded onto a Black Hawk helicopter and treated in flight to a hospital. It's interesting to me, as I read this story, the medic performed what they call a needle chest decompression. And I had no idea that such a thing existed, but he was the wounded soldier was struggling to breathe, and because of his various, I guess, bullet hole wounds to his chest cavity, he was taking on air. I mean, his chest cavity was filling up with air. And so the medic poked him to let the air out, to allow the escape of air from his chest cavity. Anyway, that was... I mean, I have no idea. I'm not
just a tremendous example. And as we treat this person properly, we'll get a lot of information. We'll teach him Christian principles if we do it right in America. And it'll be a great, again, example of liberty versus tyranny on the world stage, where we can shine as a beacon on the hill if we're willing to do it.
Absolutely right, Sam.
All right. Before the end of the hour, the U.S. quits UN Global Pact on Migration, right?
This is another reason why the lamestream media just goes wild. They freak out on Donald Trump because basically, you know, Nikki Haley and Donald Trump have decided not to take part in the Global Compact on Migration. They say it undermines the nation's sovereignty, right? I mean, that was one of the reasons that Donald Trump became so popular. He said, let's make America great again. Let's make America independent again, right? I mean, let's be sovereign. Let's act like we're sovereign. And so this is one thing that he has done so far, and I hope he sticks to it, listen, he said the U.S. is not going to participate in this global compact on migration. He says we are going to decide whether immigrants come into the country, not you, not some global body, unelected body. You're not going to tell us that we have to take people. We're going to determine that for ourselves. And so, in explaining its withdrawal a couple of Saturdays ago, the U.S. said the pact contains provisions that are inconsistent with the nation's immigration policies. I wish they would have said it was inconsistent with the Constitution, but, you know, and nevertheless, this is what they said. Nikki Haley is the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and she's the one that spoke out about it. She said, our decisions on immigration policies must always be made by Americans and Americans alone. We will decide how best to control our borders and who will be allowed to enter our country. So, you know, I think that's a fantastic position to take. And you've got the whiners at the United Nations complaining, you know, that no way can one nation manage the international migration alone. But I just view this as a very nice, encouraging development by our current administration, Sam.
Amen to that. Donald Trump has done a lot of good, even though I don't agree with him on everything, and it's certainly a wild ride in terms of political, battles that I believe are nonsensical and everything else. Donald, behind the scenes, has done way more good than we give him credit for, folks. We need to remember that. He's acknowledged God, family, and country. He's trying to protect our homeland. All we need him now to do is to turn around and get out of a lot of these foreign wars and think domestically and think defend America. That's what our military is for, avoiding foreign entanglements is the wise wisdom of the founders. We need to move back to that yesterday, and hopefully we can surround Donald with good, honest people that can, you know, put that truth in his ear. Thanks, Lowell.
You're welcome, gentlemen.
All right, there he goes. We thank Scoop Stanton, Red42.org, Red42 Radio, and Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org. What a great hour. This nation shall endure.